Well, welcome to Tucson, Tuesday. I can't even talk this morning.
A Tucson Tuesday.
Well, we got that out. Welcome to Win Tucson on a Tuesday. There, that's what was in my head. I've been up way too long today and no coffee, and it's showing. So we are going to not talk about the election today, although I do have just a small report that Maricopa County says that they've finished counting their ballots. So, yes, we need a slow clap. So we'll see. But I'm hearing that maybe Pima County's still, you know, trying to figure this out. And they're not done. And then we're hearing that several counties may not certify their election. Three, Mojave, Yavapai, and Cochise.
Eloy, I think, is the other one.
Yeah. Eloy, Eloy's not a county.
No, Eloy. Oh, yeah, Gila, I'm sorry.
Gila decided to certify
it.
Ah,
got it.
So they jumped off the bandwagon, unfortunately. But three counties are withdrawing, or not withdrawing, are withholding their certification until the letter that the Attorney General's office sent to Maricopa County is resolved. So this is still, unfortunately, election 2022. We're still in the middle of it. But we're not going to talk about that today. I am excited to say that we're going to speak up, solve some problems, and bring some solutions to everyday concerns, which is what we said we wanted to do with this show. And I am going to be joined by Dr. Brent Garrison, who is the founder and president of By the Book Consultant Group, and we'll ask him about what book that is. He spent 32 years in Christian higher education. Dr. Garrison's resume is long, and he has a doctorate in education administration, a master's in education administration, undergraduate degree in history, an extensive study in Bible and theology. Dr. Garrison has been married for 47 years, and together they have four grown children, his wife Margaret, and six grandkids. And they have worked with missions programs and women's ministries at their church. Margaret served for over 20 years as the director, and they enjoy travel, especially visiting missionaries on the field. And the work that missionaries do around the world is some of the best work that gets done for the church and for God. Brent himself is a voracious reader, enjoys motorcycle trips. I love that. And anything with wheels, he says. Golfing and drinking strong coffee, which I probably should have had some this morning. Dr. Garrison, your resume is so long. I'm going to let you share a little bit about it with my listeners. But welcome to Win Tucson this morning.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. How are you today? And go get some coffee, by the way.
Maybe on the next break I will. So you have been in education, it looks like, the majority of your life, in contributing all over the world. And so can you share a little bit about your background before we get into what we're going to talk about today? Because I think you'll do it more justice than me just reading it. I think you can lend some color, if you will, or background to your background.
Well, first of all, my resume is long is because I'm an old man. And the more years you have, the more you can add to it. But I've been privileged to spend 34 of my years in education, 2 years teaching high school sciences, and then 32 years at three different colleges, Laterno University in Longview, Texas, and then Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. I'm sure a number of people know about Moody.
I do.
It was started in 1886. And then I came out here to Phoenix in 95 to be president of Arizona Christian University here in Phoenix. So that's what brought us out here. So I love college years because, Kathleen, it's a time when students typically are making career decisions, sometimes life mate decisions. They meet in college. I have three daughters. Two of them met their husbands at the college. And then the third thing that happens in the faith world is they make faith their own. Up until that point, they're kind of following their parents' lead. But when they get away from home, they have to make a decision about what am I going to believe? Who am I going to become? So I had the privilege of kind of watching that happen in thousands of student lives over my career. In fact, Friday night, I have three lovely sisters coming over for dessert who went to Arizona Christian, and they just were such wonderful, wonderful students. Their parents were Wycliffe missionaries in Africa, and to see their lives develop and the like over the years is just such a joy. So in a long long statement, that's what I did in Christian higher ed. And in the last 12 years, I've had the privilege of loving on, praying for, and mentoring Christian business leaders of large companies. And I have thoroughly enjoyed that career as well. So,
well, and I think...
In a nutshell...
Go ahead. I'm sorry to meet you.
I was just going to say, in a nutshell, that's kind of my career. And I'm very, very blessed in the career I've had, because I've loved every moment of it. I know some people, their careers are a pain in the neck, but mine has just been the opposite. I've been so blessed.
Well, it sounds like it was a career filled with service. So you were serving the needs of college students and then serving the needs of business leaders. And I think when you can see the result of your work and you can see the fruits of your labor, so to speak, that it makes for a rewarding career. And being able to really, I think, mentoring people and coaching people and guiding people and then having them have success is its own reward. And I applaud your efforts in that. You wrote a book about biblical leadership. And before we even get started, I want to let people know how they can get that. So will you share with my listeners how they can get the book? And then we'll get into the book and how this book is different than other books that are written about biblical leadership. So,
well, thank you, first of all. Yeah, you can go on Amazon and pick it up. Leadership by the Book. And then the subtitle is Lessons from Every Book of the Bible. There's another book by Bill Hybels that's Leadership by the Book. So make sure the tagline and then my name, Garrison, and it'll pop right up on Amazon. It's available Kindle, audio, and paperback. So Amazon, Leadership by the Book, Lessons from Every Book of the Bible.
So what prompted you to write a book about biblical leadership? And why now? Why now at this time in our history, in our country? Why did you think this was important?
Well, it goes along with the last 12 years of just working with business leaders. And, I think it was about 4 years ago when I wrote the book, or 5 years ago, I began to think, how can I encourage the leaders that I'm working with to view the Bible, the scriptures, as one of the most important leadership resources they can imagine? And so I'm reading through the Bible and I came across a leadership passage, and I thought, well, maybe I could find a leadership passage in all 66 of the books.
And Brent,
so that's kind of what prompted it.
We're going to pick up right there. We're heading into a break. You're listening to Brent Garrison, PhD, we will be back right after these messages. I'm Kathleen Wynn on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. You're listening to Wynn Tucson. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson with my guest, Brent Garrison, author, PhD. Brent, are we okay, Matt? Oh, Brent's not with us.
He dropped off for a second. He'll be right back, I think.
Okay. Well, there we go. Well, I can do this. We all know the importance of leaders, and especially now when there seems to be a lack of leadership. So being guided by leadership principles. So, Brent, welcome back. And
thank you.
You, right before we went to the break, you said you started looking in the Bible to see what passages there were about leadership. And apparently by the title of your book, you found something about leadership in every book of the Bible. So,
Yes, and even in the book of Song of Solomon. you're probably going, oh, how in the world would you find a leadership principle there? But we did. And I think the thing is, Kathleen, that also prompted me is Yeah, I've been a voracious leader of leadership books for over 40 years, and a lot of Christian leadership books, and I've enjoyed them immensely. But I was always a little disappointed that they were kind of short on scripture. They talked about principles. I wanted to have every chapter start with the primacy of scripture. And so that's what we attempted to do. The chapters are short, about 300 pages long. And then we go into how we can take that principle and kind of drive it into our own lives. And at the end of every chapter, there's a short question there that relates to that, where I encourage the leader to start a leadership journal to talk about to themselves that particular topic. So that's in a nutshell how it's a little different than I think all other leadership books that are out there.
I'm a Christian. I've disclosed that before. That's not a secret. Why do you believe that the Bible is the most significant resource for leaders, though?
Well, that's a great question, and I think we've got a great answer. If the God of creation, the God who created us, gave us a gift of the Bible to share with us stories of people and people's lives. And a lot of those people were leaders, by the way, the prophets or kings or disciples. They all had a leadership role. And the beautiful thing about the Bible is that it doesn't sugarcoat their lives. It has the good with the bad. And that's true with most leaders. I mean, we have successes and we have failures. And so particularly, one of the people that I'd like to pick on a little bit is the life of Joseph. There in Genesis 37 through 50, we see his life story. And here's a very misunderstood, maligned, lied about, forgotten leader who ultimately was used by God to protect the lineage of the Jewish nation. Mm. And in that passage, Kathleen, twice, Joseph makes a statement that is absolutely, I think, paramount to all leaders. Again, all these bad things happened to him. And he said twice to his brothers, he said, "Brothers, you meant what you did to me for evil, but God meant it for good." And I don't know about you, but in my leadership life, things have been said about me that weren't necessarily encouraging or helpful. Right. They were hurting.
Yes.
But looking back at them, God used those experiences to do something remarkable in my life as a leader. So that's just one example. And there's many, many, many others in Scripture. I think it's just a wonderful list of leadership topics throughout the Scriptures. And so I argue that it's one of the best resources that a leader can take, whether they're a person of...
Oh, we lost you. Okay. Well, I think he was going to say whether you're a person of faith or not. And as we know, our founding fathers used the Bible in the construction of the Constitution. So I don't know what happened to Brent.
Hi, this is Brent Garrison.
Is he back on? Okay. So, Brent, we lost you.
Yeah. My goodness, I'm sorry. That's never happened before.
It's all good. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Well, that's all. Do you know what? It's Tuesday. I have no other reason. So what I said after we lost you for a second, I said that our founding fathers used the Bible in the construction of this country. They were very steeped and they were very religious men. They were clearly leaders. They put everything on the line and they put their faith in God. And although some leaders that are running companies maybe are not putting their lives on the line, there is a role that a leader has in a business that requires great discipline, integrity, in order to be a leader, you have to, you can be a leader whether you're a good leader or a bad leader, but in order to be a successful leader, I think that to understand that there is a higher power, that there is another way, or an, other wisdom out there, that other people have walked maybe in your shoes, and to be guided by those principles. I think some of the best leaders I know are guided by those principles that come from the Bible. And in your coaching, I don't know if you saw that.
Well, in fact, I do a little exercise sometimes in my consulting. I'll ask them, a group of employees, you've had leaders in your life that you worked for, and was it their skill, was it their intellect, or their character that made them a great leader? And invariably, every time I've done this, a number of times, it's character that comes out on top. Intellect, if they're a leader, they probably have a modicum of intellect. They probably have a modicum of skill. And they could be the smartest, they could be the most skillful. But if they don't have character, then their leadership is on a faulty foundation. And so again, it goes right back to character. I also look at the life of Christ in Philippians chapter 2. And if we boil leadership down to two things, I think it's this. In Philippians 2, it says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. And I go, okay, now you got my attention. What's the mind of Christ? And it's one of humility, and it's one of service. And again, Kathleen, can you imagine working for somebody that they're a humble, teachable person, and that rather than being served, they serve you? I think that's a powerful combination. And again, whether you're a believer in Scripture or not, I think any leader can go a long way with that mindset of humility and service.
Well, and I think humility in leadership right now is something that I believe is sorely missing. Unfortunately, and this is just my opinion, you don't have to agree or disagree, but a lot of our leaders are about self-promotion or becoming famous or getting out a comment, or we've become a culture of followers, but not true followers, just likes. And so it's like instant gratification. And I think we've lost the art, that there's actually an art and a skill to leadership, that when you really serve people and bring out the best in others, I believe that that is a skill and a talent, and that everyone, as we look across the country, the state, the globe, we are lacking in that kind of humble humility in our leaders. And so I'd love to see more leaders across the world turn to the Bible as a guide, as a resource for their leadership. What are some of the leadership topics that the Bible addresses that we might be surprised about?
Well, it's a great, great question again, and I have a list, in fact, that I'm going to allude to here.
Okay.
Because I think people will be surprised that the Bible speaks to such a variety of topics. We think, oh, it's just an old, ancient book that really doesn't have any purpose for today, but that's just not the case. I mean, for example, in Leviticus, it talks about a leader needing to have a teachable spirit. In Joshua, it talks about remembering people. In Ruth, it talks about the character of a good man. In 1 Samuel, patience. In 2 Kings, your legacy as a leader. In other words, how are people going to remember you? In First Chronicles, how others want to please you. I love this little story. When I was at Moody, the president, Dr. Joe Stoll, came into cabinet one day and told a little story about this whole idea of how people want to please you, so be really careful. Anyway, he was walking down the hall of one of the buildings, and the painters were just finishing painting that hallway, and I think it was beige. Dr. Stoll said, well, that looks great. Thanks so much. And an off-the-cuff comment, my favorite color is blue. The next day he walked down that hallway, what color do you think it was, Kathleen?
The hallway was painted blue. And on that, they repainted it blue to make him happy.
Yeah, exactly. And he told that story to us.
I love it. Well, we're going to take a short break. And Brent, can you hang with us one more segment?
Sure can.
Okay, great. We'll be back right after these messages. I'm Kathleen Wynn. You're listening to Wynn Tucson on 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn, and you are being joined today by Brent Garrison, PhD, by the book. So, Brent, something, I'm completing a term on the Maricopa Community College Governing Board. I have a meeting tonight and one more meeting after that, and then I will have completed a four-year term in education. And I learned a lot. I probably learned more than we contributed, unfortunately, but I'm watching young people come into college, and there seems to be a lack of direction, a lack of purpose, and really people trying to figure out what they want to be when they grow up. And at the community college, it's not a Christian college. It serves the community. But how do we, there's so much knowledge, people our age, I'll cop to being old. How do we contribute life lessons to young people because they're really the future? And I just think that for me, there seems to be a disconnect between this generation coming into leadership, into, you know, 18, 19, 20, trying to figure out who they are and what they want to do in the world. And how do we contribute to that to them, but help them get their own success as opposed to, I see a lot of people our age saying, I did this, I did this, I did this. And, you know, that brought me success. But it's different to engage with someone who's just starting out and to be, give them the benefit of our wisdom without kind of beating them up with our resume. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I'm an old person too, so
I let you go first on that today, but I couldn't let you get away with being old by yourself. So,
yeah, thank you so much. There's a lot of us out there, by the way.
I know.
I start by saying this, and I think there's some truth in it. First of all, when we were 18, we didn't know what we were going to do either. I don't know about you, but at 18, I was at Indiana University. I changed majors a couple times. And by the way, that's not unusual back then, and it's not unusual today to have a student change a major because they are trying to discover what's going on. So that's always been the case. But I agree with you. I think I started my college career in administration in 1978 and ended in 2010. So that's a pretty long period of time kind of seeing how things change. And a couple things that I think are impacting that, if I may.
Please.
The breakup of the family is having a huge impact on young people. And as much as we don't want to admit it, because a lot of us are coming from broken marriages, and thank God I'm not. We're coming up on 48 years. By the grace of God, Maggie's put up with me all these years. But there's so many that have broken marriages, and the kids are being impacted, bottom line. Number two, I think there's a thing called helicopter parents, and I saw that develop. In other words, parents were not necessarily willing to allow their child to fail or to be confronted with their failure. And I think that's a horrible thing to do to young people. Let them fail. Let them deal with the ramifications of not getting their homework in on time or meeting deadlines, and then learning responsibility because of that. Literally, Kathleen, we had parents who were filling out the college application for their kids. And I go, what? Or if they got in trouble with academics, the parent would call up and complain, about that, rather than supporting the faculty member in their assessment of their son or daughter. That's another impact on kind of not maturing.
If you don't raise your children to be independent and free thinking, yeah, then they always have to rely on you. And God forbid something happens to that parent, then what has that child learned if they're not self-reliant?
Yeah. And then I think I'd add one more thing, and we all know this is true. The last decade, particularly, is the whole platform of social media. And it's causing them to not interact personally with people. I mean, this is funny. I told so many parents, they'd say, well, I call my kid and they never answer the phone. I go, well, text them. And they text them and they respond right away. And I go, you know what they're doing? They're controlling the conversation. They don't want to talk to you on the phone. They want to control the conversation through texting. And that's a little bit of a selfish thing. So all kinds of things have kind of come together in a perfect storm in the last decades to cause this milieu that I think young people have. And the other thing is I heard from researchers that particularly young men are not maturing as much as they used to. They're in their late 20s now before they're at a similar maturity level of decades ago in their late teens. And I think that also is reflected upon not being able to make decisions. So I think if you put those things together, that's part of the problem. But then you ask, if I can go on, how do we instill in them some purpose? And I think, again, is there somebody in their life that's taking the time to ask them questions about their life, about are you happy where you're at now? Where would you like to be in the future? And then sometimes what steps need to be taken between the present and the future to get there? And a lot of young people, they don't even get that because they've never had to do it before. Simple things that you and I have figured out over the years, they don't necessarily have that skill to ask the right questions of themselves. So that's just my take.
No,
I'm an old man.
And I get it. And I think it's very, very valuable what you just said. I think finding out where students are, meet them wherever they are, and really have I think communication, not a text conversation, but a real conversation face to face, and figuring out what's important to them. They are enthusiastic. They're motivated. I think there's a lack of direction and I agree with you on helicopter parents. I am confident my husband and I, we have 7 children. They are all independent. Sometimes that's a little hard to take, but I'm grateful because I they all have very strong opinions, which is it can be a good thing. But I understand. I worry about the lack of leadership as we go forward in this society and kind of the moral compass that people are guiding themselves with. I completely agree with you that we incentivized, at least in this country, removing fathers from families with welfare. And so we have a lot of single parents, but a lot of single mothers raising children.
Yeah.
And without that strong role model, without that leader in the family guiding and directing, it causes the problem that I think we're facing. We've had a decrease of marriages staying together longer. I think the divorce rate is higher than it's ever been. And so that does have an impact on the family. And I think that, again, when you have a family, you are a leader in your family as parents. And how do you choose to lead your family? It's off your book topic a little, but I think it could actually apply because I think our families are one of the most important jobs that we ever have when we're here,
right,
which is to take care of our children. And now you've got 6, I've got 16 grandchildren, and they're very young. And I worry about the world that they're growing up in. And I think that there's been a falling away from biblical principles and the Bible and Christianity in general, that there's been a concerted effort to diminish and to devalue the input and the importance of strong values in families and Christian values in families.
You bring up a point that I speak to quite a bit recently, is that when I grew up, again, being an old man, I graduated high school in 1970, there seemed to be a monolithic culture. And what I mean by that is government, law, media, family, and church were kind of working together, if that makes sense. There wasn't the disparity between the different groups that we have today.
Correct.
I grew up with Father Knows Best and Donna Reed and Gilligan's Island. We didn't have a lot of the wokeism and CRT nonsense that we have today in schools. My parents stayed together, even though their marriage was not, it was a rocky marriage. My mom had mental illness issues, but my dad was of a mindset that you stay together for the family. And so my brother and I watched my dad's faithfulness, and that rubbed off on us, Kathleen. And then everything kind of worked together to mold character in people, whether they're of faith or not. Well, think about today. The family is broken at some level. The media is absolutely godless and hedonistic. The legal system is again, they're releasing people after they commit heinous crimes.
Correct.
The higher ed community is completely broken. And I think a lot of Christian schools too have bought into this nonsense of liberal progressive think. And so it's like there's nothing in our culture, and even the church is not standing up the way it should be in proclaiming truth and character and wisdom. And so young people are growing up without a model.
And I think there's a lack of moral courage to do so. I think there's more of a commitment to have bodies than to have principles.
Yep.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and we come back, I'm going to ask you, and so you can think about it over the break, what is the secret sauce of biblical leadership, okay? So I'm joined by Brent Garrison, PhD. We're talking about biblical leadership, and I am Kathleen Wynn from Wynn Tucson. You're listening to 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to The Voice. I'm Kathleen Wynn, and I'm joined by Dr. Brent Garrison, founder and president of By the Book Consulting Group. So right before we went to break, Brent, is there a secret sauce of biblical leadership? And if there is, what is it?
Well, yes, I do believe there is. And I alluded to it some time ago in our interview, and that's the mind of Christ. Again, humility and service. What a powerful combination. In fact, Patrick Lencioni talks about in his book, The Ideal Worker. He starts with humility. And humility is a mindset, is it not? And to work for somebody that doesn't have all the answers and thinks they have all the answers is I think, a wonderful thing, that they're humble, they're teachable. They admit mistakes. That's part of humility. I made a mistake. I think even as parents, we sometimes need to admit, I blew it, son or daughter, with that particular decision I made. And when a boss or leader says, I was wrong, wow, does that build trust and confidence in the people that work for them? And then the second part of his servanthood. In the Bible, it says Christ came to serve and not to be served. Wow. What a mindset. And some leaders, as you move up the ladder, the tendency is to think that I'm more important than anybody else. And that's not a biblical leadership vantage point. Again, to work with somebody that they're a servant, not only to be served. Now, we naturally want to serve the leader as an employee, don't we? But when the leader switches that around and they begin to serve the employee, again, a powerful, powerful secret sauce, humility and servanthood. So I think that's the secret sauce out of Philippians chapter 2.
And I think you mentioned this also early in our interview, which is acknowledging those people around you for the work that they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that can't be understated enough, that many things that get accomplished through teams, through a motivated workforce, of a shared objective or a shared goal. And to not, if it's all about one person, that may work for a short time, but as a long-term strategy in business, it won't succeed. So you have to, there has to be a greater vision for people to step into. I think you see a lot of companies not only producing a product, but then their philanthropy work is also almost as important as the product that they produce.
Yes.
And I think that is a positive in American business, that we I believe that as Americans, and this can be global, but I believe it, as Americans, that we do really try to take care of each other, and that that leadership can be done in very, very many different styles. However, ultimately, in order to be successful, there has to be a product that is for the greater good and that is needed, and that the company, you know, you can have two companies that are doing the same thing. One company can thrive and the other can fail dismally, and it could be the culture of the company that causes that. We've also been seeing people push back, to your point earlier about the culture and where we are in the culture, against companies that are not using biblical principles. I think we just saw Disney is a perfect example of not having a culture that really serves their audience, which is primarily children. And the hypersexualization of Disney and what they were doing. And I think that they've now changed their leadership back to their old leader and pushed out the, if you will, I hate the woke culture, but that's not, parents want to be able to trust where, what input their children get.
Well, I agree. You also think of Hallmark, television channel or streaming channel, and how they've even changed, and how another channel was started by a previous Hallmark executive. And a lot of the stars from Hallmark have left and gone over to the other channel. So, again, sometimes it's not even a good business decision to open yourselves up to progressivism. And Kathleen, if I could also, in my consulting work, I think there's a couple things that most businesses need to really consider that I've found to be kind of the main problems. Number one is candor. Candor is that willingness in a company or ministry to address things that need to be said, the elephant in the room, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge part that I work with. Number two, people not playing well together, and that's culture. How do people treat one another? And the scriptures in Matthew talks about, you know, treating others as you would want to be treated. And that's a biblical concept. And then number three is a leader following through with what they said they'd do. And a lot of times things are said and nothing happens. And after a while, people go, well, didn't do anything about it. They said they would. So then trust is broken because of that. But I think addressing those three areas in a business or a ministry are key areas. And all of those can be traced back to biblical stories or principles, by the way.
Well, I think to give your word and to keep your word, especially if you're a leader in a company, at some point, if you don't do that, people that are following you aren't going to follow, or they're going to look for another place to work. I think that is paramount. My husband, when he was at Boeing, they had a saying, promises made, promises kept. I think President Trump co-opted that years later, but I have it on a poster first, so I just want people to know. But I think it's really important that if you're going to, it's not about, you know, what I say, it's what I do. And and as a leader, if you can't demonstrate the very thing that you're saying we need, there's a disconnect. And inside a workplace, there's many different personalities. People don't always get along. But you might be surprised that people that you necessarily don't agree with, I think sometimes can make the greatest contribution to you. If you only surround yourself with people that agree with you and that think the way that you think, there's going to be... It's kind of boring, but there's no conflict, and there's no discussion, and there's no intellectual discussion. And I think candor was the word you used. I think every once in a while, it's okay to say, "Hey, there's an elephant in the room, and we need to solve this problem." Because if you don't, if you leave things unchecked, they don't get better. they get worse. And to deny that something is wrong or broken, then, and to ignore it, ultimately, the consequences of that can be monumental.
Sure, can.
And so I think it's important.
One of the leaders I got to know the last 10 years is Cheryl Batchelder. Cheryl worked for PepsiCo at one time, but then she became CEO of Popeyes. Everybody knows Popeyes Fried Chicken. And when she became CEO about 10 years ago, the company was really having some cultural problems. So she sat down and she said she had these town hall meetings with the employees and said, what kind of culture do you want this company to be? And she said, what amazed me is they came up with the same list of values that I would have come up with, but they came up with them. And so she said, since you came up with them, this is what we're going to try to create here. And that's exactly what happened in a very short period of time. How people wanted to be treated is the same way as a leader thinks they want to be treated. But we assume, no, they don't really feel the same way I do. Well, they probably do. And so that was just a great exercise she used in trying to transform a broken culture at Popeyes.
Well, I think it's brilliant, especially because they all agreed, but she had them own the direction of the company and have, and when you have ownership and you have buy-in, and, you know, take it back to our young people, let's see where they want to go. I don't think it's that far removed from where we'd like to go, but then let's give direction and have them own the future. And I think that's where we, as old people, can really contribute to this next generation. And I really, I like that example that you use with Popeyes, because I think, was it successful once they applied that? Maybe tell the rest of that story.
In fact, it was so successful, a private equity firm bought them a couple of years ago. And I don't know if the culture still is strong, but that was one of the things that they were interested in. You know, one other thing, if I may, Kathleen, I think, again, as an old person, man, I should have learned many, many years ago, rather than telling, do more asking. Ask questions.
Exactly.
It turns people off more often than not when I come into a situation and I tell them, rather than asking a question, and asking questions so that they can come to their own conclusions. And I think that's good leadership, don't you? That Jesus used questions a lot in his teaching. He used parables. And again, we tend to think leaders, we need to tell people what to do. Sometimes we ask the question and help them come to that same conclusion. And it's a powerful tool.
Well, I love to ask questions, obviously. And I think it's a great leadership tool. And I used to ask my husband a lot of questions. I still do. And he would always ask me, are you writing a book? So that may be the next thing I do with all my questions. Brent, thanks for joining us today. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving and continue to lead with biblical principles. Have a great day, everybody. You've been listening to Kathleen Wynn on Wynn Tucson, 10:30 a.m., The Voice.